They've got the backing of the union, and it is highly unlikely that they would be fired for making a complaint about safety and health conditions in their mine.
Alan Smith, thanks for joining us, editor of Mine Safety and Health News. That does it for today's broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shreya Pagopadoos, John Hamilton, Anna Nagara, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Richin, Maddie Harper, and Aaron Mate. Our website is democracynow.org. Mike DeFlip, our engineer. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB, Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock, time for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. An hour of ranting and raving by yours truly, Emmanuel Goldstein. And also an opportunity for me to figure out what's going on in the world, because oftentimes I don't have time myself to look into it. And this hour is when I sometimes go through the shocking news for the first time myself. So it's as much an education for me as it is... Well, I guess really not for anybody else, but it can be entertaining. Maybe. We'll see. Of course, the big news today is the disbanding of two broadcast television networks in these here United States, which normally would be very good news, except that they intend to reform as something even stronger and mightier. I'm talking, in case you haven't heard about this, it's kind of big news, I guess, even though they're the two lowest rated and smallest networks, and also the two crappiest. Those don't always go hand in hand, but they did this time. Many times the lower rated programs are the best ones, but my God, some of the things on UPN and the WB, which are the two networks I'm talking about, they set the standard for crap. They really did. I mean, you know, go to Wikipedia. Type in crap and you'll see a picture of that stupid frog on the WB and UPN, whatever their logo is this month. So, the standards were set. But now new standards will be set as the two networks disband and then reform in September. They're going to call themselves the CW Network. Now, within 5 minutes of this being announced, some people over on Usenet have dubbed CW Crap World. So this is going to be known for all time as the Crap World Network. They'll be combining the WB and UPN. And by the way, the CW is supposed to stand for, well, CBS is the C part. It's great when you get acronyms formed from other acronyms. You know, CBS is an acronym for Columbia Broadcasting System. And now they're taking the C from that and putting it in the CW Network. Isn't that great? And reminds me of when MSNBC was formed. No, CNBC, that was the one. The Cable News and Business Channel. Yeah, it had NBC in it, but it didn't stand for National Broadcasting Company anymore. I don't know. When corporations try to be creative, it's really ugly sometimes. Okay, the W, what does W stand for? Oh, come on, you must know this. They own everything. Well, it's kind of confusing because It's Time Warner, but it's not the Time part. It's just the Warner part. So it's Columbia Warner, I guess, is the way to say it, huh? How else would you say it? CBS Warner? Can you do it that way? All right. Warner Brothers and CBS Corp have announced plans for the creation of a new broadcast television network called CW, Crap World, that would... I'm going to say it from now on. I really will, because it fits so perfectly. That will replace the WB and UPN networks in the fall of this year. The new broadcast network, unfortunately, will draw on programming from both WB and UPN, and will be a joint venture between Warner Brothers and CBS. And I think they've done the research to make sure neither of these companies already owns the other one, right? Have they done that this time? It was really embarrassing last time when well, that's a problem. When monopolies form, when companies start owning other companies, sometimes you accidentally sue yourself, and it's really embarrassing for everybody. Each company is going to own 50%, and according to the chairman of CBS, Les Moonves, you know, never notice how the people running networks have their weirdest names in the world? Les Moonves. How many Lesses do you know, first of all? Do you know anybody with the name of Moonves? I'm convinced that these people are so traumatized from having their names made fun of in school that they set forth to get even with the rest of society however they may see fit. And that's how broadcast networks are formed. Anyway, he said this. Or it could be a she. I don't even know. This new network will serve the public with high-quality programming and maintain our ongoing commitment to our diverse audience. I probably didn't laugh quite as much after saying it, but my God, high-quality programming. Okay, and yes, for those of you who care, the most highbrow program on the network will still continue to be SmackDown from the WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. No longer Foundation, because the World Wildlife Foundation got those letters. Okay, that's the big news. The second biggest story, I guess, is the election of a new government in Canada. Canada has taken a step to the right. Oh boy. How is that even possible? You look down at the United States. I don't mean looking down because you're superior to the United States, although I certainly could have said that. And probably not have gotten into too much of a debate over it, because let's face it, the whole world is looking down on us right now, but I don't want to say that because I don't want to be controversial. I mean look down geographically, because we're to the south. You look down at us, and you see how messed up everything is, what a conservative policy does, the scandals, the financial disasters, the death toll. Yes, that's right. There's a death toll for conservative government these days. A big one. You look at the way the rest of the world no longer respects us, if they ever did. You look at the fear in people's eyes as they walk through the streets and through the fields where there aren't any streets. Everybody is afraid now. Nobody feels secure. The infrastructure is falling apart. It's hell. It's living hell. You look at that. Why would you say, you know, we need to move in that direction? We need something conservative. Well, I gotta say, though, at least the way the system worked up there, they haven't given too much power over. Even though they have a new prime minister, Stephen Harper will be the new prime minister, it's a minority government, meaning that his government does not have control over parliament and won't be able to do all that much. Things like outlawing the gay marriage bill that was passed last year. Things like making abortion harder to obtain. Or the various other things that we face here in this country. However, Harper pledged to carry out his campaign promises quickly to cut taxes. Boy, does that sound familiar. Get tough on crime. I've heard that before, too. And repair strained ties with Washington after his Conservative Party won national elections yesterday. The other cool thing, though, about this is that they had a month for the whole process. The government fell last month, and yesterday the elections occurred, and they have a new government. I don't agree with the government. I think it's probably a very bad idea, but the system is kind of cool. You can actually see change. It's not always the change you want, but just the fact that you can get change that quickly. Can you imagine what a system like that would be like in this country? If we actually had the power to throw a government out and replace it inside of a month. Wow. I dream of days like this. Anyway, the tax thing is, well, they don't have that much of a military budget, so perhaps that won't be quite as much of a disaster as cutting the taxes here was. But the conservative winning margin was way too narrow to rule with a majority, and that's going to make it hard for them to get legislation through the divided House of Commons. Monday's vote showed that Canadians are weary of the Liberal Party's broken promises and corruption scandals. They were willing to give Harper a chance to govern, despite concerns that some of his social views are extreme. According to Harper, the new government, which is not likely to be sworn in for several weeks. They don't even know when they're going to swear them in. Isn't that kind of neat, too? It's not written in stone. Whenever they get around to it. He says the new government would immediately move to cut the unpopular national sales tax from 7% to 6%, return the justice system to fight against crime and gangs. I'm not quite sure what that means. I wasn't aware of the justice system saying they didn't care about crime anymore or gangs or anything like that. Sounds like, you know, politicking. And the new government will begin to allocate $1,042 Canadian, which is about, what, $30 here or something? No, I'm kidding. Well, most of our listeners are in Canada, so I'm not going to insult you, but you know, it's just funny to make fun of the Canadian dollar. It's one of those things. Allocate $1,042 to Canadian families for each child they have needing daycare. Does that sound like a conservative thing to you? He also wants to introduce a Federal Accountability Act that will monitor government spending in an effort to avoid the corruption scandals that have plagued the Liberals. Okay, that doesn't sound so bad. We will do this because shuffling the deck in Ottawa is not good enough. We need to do this to make the system more accountable to you, the Canadian taxpayers. Now, here's the thing. Relations with the Bush administration will likely improve under Harper as his ideology runs along the same lines of many U.S. Republicans. Harper said he would reconsider a U.S. missile defense scheme rejected by the Liberal government of Prime Minister Paul Martin. He also said he wanted to move beyond the Kyoto debate by establishing different environmental controls, spend more on the Canadian military, here we go, expand its peacekeeping missions, and tighten security along the U.S. border to prevent terrorists and guns from crossing. Well, it all sounds good on paper, preventing terrorists and guns from crossing borders, but you have to be very careful as to what that actually means. But it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to watch this. I'd like to hear feedback from various people up there as to just how worried you really are and if this is something that we need to be concerned about. In this country, of course, scandals continue, but we don't have elections. We don't have ways of throwing people out. I saw this MSNBC poll a couple of weeks ago. And, of course, these polls don't really mean anything. They're kind of a slight barometer of public sentiment. And the question here, this was in light of the NSA scandal, you know, the one where the government is spying on American citizens, talking to people overseas. Somehow that seems to justify it in their eyes. Well, you talk to somebody over an ocean. So it's not the same thing as spying on somebody, talking to somebody across the country. No, the ocean. The ocean got in the way, and that means we can listen. Yeah, okay. And that the thing is, that logic is starting to work on some people. It really is. Okay, the question was, do you believe President Bush's actions justify impeachment? Do you believe President Bush's actions, authorizing the NSA to spy on American citizens, whether there was an ocean involved or not, do those actions justify impeachment? Well, there were nearly 100,000 responses to this little poll on MSNBC. And of those responses, 85% said yes. 85%. Yes, between the secret spying, the deceptions leading to war, and more, there's plenty to justify putting him on trial. Okay, let's go. Come on. What are we waiting for? Get the paddy wagon, or whatever it is you need to do. Put the guy on trial, for God's sake. The people want it. Well, okay, again, this is not a scientific poll, but I'm willing to bet that this does reflect some major opinion out there. You know, a lot more so than the farce. Did you see this yesterday? Oh, my God. I woke up early in the afternoon. All right, I've fallen into a bad schedule again. And there was Bush on television having this folksy little talk at a university. At a university. Oh, my God. You know, this was something that I was fantasizing about. Bring Bush to a university. Have him face a university crowd. And, boy, he'd really have something to remember. He'd really be taken to task. He'd have, you know, all sorts of things would go on. All sorts of questions would be raised. There'd be commotions. There'd be shouting. There'd be booing and hissing and all sorts of things. Maybe even a pie would be thrown. Remember the days where you could throw a pie and you weren't considered a terrorist? You wouldn't be shot? I think we need more of that. We need more pies to be thrown. I don't think anyone's ever been killed by a pie, have they? Probably there's some bizarre story where somebody did. But, okay, the thing is, Bush was giving this talk at Kansas State University in Manhattan, Kansas. Manhattan, Kansas, how do you like that? Okay, you know, it's Kansas, I know. But it's a university. It's a university, so there have to be people with independent minds out there who are willing to ask some hard questions, who are smart enough not to be controlled and lied to. So, when I heard that he was actually going to take questions from the audience, I was so happy. I thought, this is it. This is finally the moment I've been waiting for. What I have here are the questions that were asked, quote-unquote spontaneously, by the audience at this university where Bush was giving a talk. And you tell me if I'm right to feel the way I feel, which I'll get into later. All right, first question. Mr. President, we salute what you have done, your aggressive stance on terrorism. But more than that, as you know, Kansas is a beef state. The number one industry in the state of Kansas is beef production and beef processing. A strong beef industry indicates a strong Kansas, and it affects all of us. We sincerely appreciate your efforts in regaining our markets with Japan, your aggressive stance on trade. We support that tremendously. I wonder if you would just comment on what's happened recently. Okay. Beef. Yeah, that's always been the issue that we've wanted to ask Bush about, is the beef thing. I won't get into the answer. It goes on for about a page here. Suffice to say, I don't care. Next question. Thank you, Mr. President. One of the things that most of our Senate delegation has worked tirelessly on is the situation in the Sudan. Sudan was, of course, slated to be the chair of the African Union next year, which is they have tried, much like the United Nations, to do something. Does the United States have a larger role to play in the Sudan and the entire sub-Saharan African region? Okay, well, you know, that's not really something that's at the top of my agenda either. I don't really recall Bush playing a major role in the Sudan or really even probably knowing where it is. All right, two questions gone, two opportunities missed. Let's see, maybe this next one we get any more luck. What is your position, or would you comment on a long-term strategy with respect to the geopolitical ambitions of China and Iran? Well, you know, that's an interesting question. It is. China and Iran are two very fascinating places right now. But Did you just crawl out from under a rock? These are not the places that are in the headlines every single day. These are not the places where our people are dying every single day. These are not the places where the scandal of this administration is focused. How is it possible that three questions can go by like this and not a single person has even brought up the I word? The four-letter I word, and I don't mean Iran. All right. I think they probably realized that nobody was going to believe these questions were spontaneous if somebody didn't bring up Iraq. So, this next spontaneous question comes from someone who did just that. Hello, Mr. President. I am an American Iraqi Kurd. I would like to salute you and salute all the troops who are freeing 27 million people. They are free! And then there was a whole lot of applause. And once that died down, the questioner continued. How'd they find an American Iraqi Kurd in Kansas? Does anybody know? I mean, most people in Kansas have probably never even seen Jewish people. All right, I know I'm going to get a lot of mail now, but I don't care. Are there really a lot of Iraqi Kurds in Kansas? You have to look pretty hard in New York to find... Continuing. Mr. President, I would like to share the thought with all our nation and everybody who is questioning what happened to the chemical weapons. Saddam burned 4,500 villagers. I lost more than 10 members of my family under the ground. We found their bones after, when we freed Iraq, Saddam himself and his people, his followers, they are chemical weapons. They are chemical weapons. Please stop questioning the administration and their decision. It was the best decision anybody could take, freeing 27 million people. Please stop questioning the administration. That's the only question so far having to do with Iraq. And it's more of a statement. This person goes on to give a veritable speech. And I don't really want to get into that any more than I already have. But, my God. Continuing. Next question. This is from somebody... from England. Us British, we're a querulous people, and we know that we're one of your greatest supporters in the world. And Tony Blair, who I have the greatest respect for, is my leader. When you say jump, he says how high. Interesting. At least that's a perception of many of the British people. And when he agrees and does your bidding, then it weakens him on the home front at home. And many people enjoy this, but some of the more vocal ones will say he's a yes man. Have you discussed that with him? Etc. Interesting question. But you notice that in there's no real criticism of any policy. Tony Blair's my leader. I respect him quite a bit. We're your greatest supporters. And in a way, it's kind of a shot at Tony Blair. Nothing at Bush. You have Bush in front of you, and, you know, you don't say anything critical. Well, here's another one. I have a question less with politics and more with leadership in general. You're in a situation where you're under a lot of flack, especially for your character, and that's something that, it seems to me, means a lot to you, as it does to many of us here. As a leader, as many of us are going to need to know here, because we're going to be leaders in just a few years, who are these people? Who is he? It doesn't sound like a university crowd. My God, I mean, you give a speech like that at a university here, we're going to be leaders in a few years? Maybe some of us, but not all of us, not most of us. Typical university would not say something like that. All right, we're going to be leaders in just a few years. What's the best way that you go about preparing yourself for attacks on your character, and how do you deal with others in those matters? Boy, talk about a softball question there. And that, of course, gave Bush the opportunity to talk about how, listen to this, one of the biggest disappointments is the tone in Washington, D.C., I've done my best to try to elevate the tone, but the needless name-calling to me is beneath the dignity of the office of the president, and of course he got all sorts of applause for that as well. It's hilarious. It's hilarious to see these people attempt to convey the notion that it's a free and open conversation. I'd sure like to hear from people who were there. Not that I think I ever will. How are these questions selected? Here's another question. Mr. President, thank you for being here. I served under your father. What kind of student serves under Bush Sr.? I served under your father. He was my commander-in-chief in Desert Storm. Okay, these are not students, obviously, are they? They're soldiers. These are soldiers, Iraqi Kurds, and God knows who else they managed to drag into this thing. It was with great interest that I followed your campaign. My husband and I are great fans of yours. I thank you for making the hard decisions, for making, not listening to the critics, and keeping your campaign promise. Yeah, don't listen to the critics. Why would you ever want to do that? Next question. I'd like to say, when I was first able to cast my vote for president, it was my honor to vote for you. Okay, you know, I've seen this before. I told myself I wasn't going to get angry, but it just angers me. I can't look at it anymore. But that, my friends, is an example of free and honest discussion, debate, engagement of ideas. Obviously staged questions. Come on, Bush. Show some guts. Go to Columbia. Go to NYU. Go to Stony Brook. Go any place. Put all the questions in a jar and pick them out. No, wait. You'd have to read them then. What's there to be afraid of? You know, you're probably behind some kind of invisible plexiglass shield or something. Nobody can get to you. The only thing that you have to do is come up with a defense of your policy. I see what the problem is now. I see why you're afraid. All right. Well, when all else fails, we must resort to humor. And the best source for humor these days is the right wing. I have a collection of quotes here from various people. These are all real bona fide quotes. I'm going to read a quote, give you a moment to think about who might have said such a thing, and then I will reveal the source of the quote. This is great fun at parties, by the way. Here we go. The media is ruled by Satan, but yet I wonder if many Christians fully understand that. Also, will they believe what the media says, considering that its aim is to steal, kill, and destroy? You could not write better dialogue if you were making some sort of science fiction. it's insane the kinds of things that people in the mainstream say. Who was that? That was Jimmy Swaggart from Jimmy Swaggart Ministries. You know, kind of a thing you would expect from that neck of the woods, I guess, but still. Okay, who said this? Homosexuals are weak, morally sick wretches. Who do you think said that? No? Senator Jesse Helms. Yeah. These are people in government, not just the insane religious people. Let's see. Where should we go next? Okay, here's one of my favorites. We should invade their countries, kill their leaders, and convert them to Christianity. We weren't punctilious about locating and punishing only Hitler and his top officers. We carpet-bombed German cities. We killed civilians. That's war, and this is war. Well, I think as soon as I said the word punctilious, we all knew that that was Ann Coulter. And she's no end of amazing quotes. Let's see, where should I go next? All right, how about this one? I don't know that atheists should be considered citizens, nor should they be considered patriots. This is one nation under God. Who said that? I don't know that atheists should be considered citizens, nor should they be considered patriots. This is one nation under God. Well, that was President George Bush Sr. That's right. It's really scary when you realize how these people think and the power that we give them. How about this? For the first time ever, everything is in place for the Battle of Armageddon and the Second Coming of Christ. Who said that? What crazy lunatic said that? That was President Ronald Reagan. And in related development, we don't have to protect the environment. The second coming is at hand. Well, that was Secretary of the Interior James Watt under Ronald Reagan. It's amazing we survived those years. And now Ronald Reagan is remembered as one of the greatest presidents of all time. Yeah, it's I can understand a world like that, but shouldn't there be some kind of drugs involved? If we're going to believe these things, at least give us the drugs. And, let's see, one more for the road. If you can handle being on the road, after seeing this. No, we're not going to read him, he's too much of a lunatic. Hang on, we'll find something good here. There's just so many to choose from. And we already read from him, we can't read from him again. No, he has a lot of quotes. Okay, all right. No, that's not right either. Okay, how about this? George Bush was not elected by a majority of the voters in the United States. He was appointed by God. Lieutenant General William Boykin. Yeah. We'll have more of these quotes in weeks ahead. I'm sure more of them will be spoken in weeks ahead. And if you have any, please send them to us. Our email address is otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. But boy, you know, it's scary times we live in. In all fairness, though, we've been reading a lot from the right wing. How about some extra time? Extra time for the other side. Not the left wing, because there is no real left wing in this country. It only exists to destroy itself, and the Democrats are just another version of the Republicans. I'm talking about the enemy of the people, Osama bin Laden, who released an audio tape this week. I understand they had a lot of time booking a studio or something, but it was released. Some of it was actually aired, but you may not have heard the actual words that were spoken. We're all aware that it came out, but how many of us heard the words that were spoken? Well, friends, I'd like to be able to read to you those words. I don't mean to give undue attention, but I think what he says is something that we should pay attention to. Since he may be telling people by name that they're at risk, or might be giving us a hint of something that's to come, or might just have a really good joke in there. Who knows? All right, but, you know, I don't want to. I asked for some instrumental music so I can. It's just reading Osama bin Laden without anything behind me is kind of spooky. And people might think that it's me actually saying this, and instrumental music somehow makes it a bit more. All right, is that instrumental? They're singing. They're singing, it's not instrumental. Okay. All right, they cut the vocal track. Good. All right, so these are the words of Osama bin Laden in the audio tape that was released. My message to you is about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and how to end them. I did not intend to speak to you about this because this issue has already been decided. Only metal breaks metal. Only metal breaks metal. And our situation, thank God, is only getting better and better. While your situation is the opposite of that. Okay. But I plan to speak about the repeated errors your President Bush has committed in comments on the results of your polls that show an overwhelming majority of you want the withdrawal of American troops from Iraq. But, you know, I really like this. What is this? It's good. There's not enough funk in the world, you know? It's really good. Kudos to whoever put this out. Bush has opposed this wish and said that withdrawing troops sends the wrong messages to opponents. That it is better to fight them, meaning bin Laden's followers, on their land than they're fighting us, meaning Americans, on our land. It's kind of confusing, I know. I get the general idea. I'm speaking of sending the wrong message. I mean, this music is so good that maybe it's not the thing to play when we're reading bin Laden. You know what I mean? Do we have something else? All right, we have another piece. All right. Let's play that instead. Again, there's music. There's vocals here. Okay. Oh, what is this? Tribe Called Quest? Awesome. Okay, that's kind of cool. I can reply to these errors by saying that war in Iraq is raging. Take the whole line again. I can reply to these errors by saying that war in Iraq is raging with no let-up, and operations in Afghanistan are escalating in our favor, thank God. And Pentagon figures show the number of your dead and wounded is increasing, not to mention the massive material losses, the destruction of the soldiers' morale there, and the rise in cases of suicide among them. Who's telling him this? Who's feeding information to Osama bin Laden from the Pentagon? Yeah, I think they have a leak someplace. Or maybe there's a website that's showing that our soldiers are getting killed, or some kind of information that really shouldn't be public. I like this, too. In fact, this is one of my favorite songs. Not the instrumental version, but the song itself. Yeah, do we have something else? Please. I don't mean to be, you know, all fussy about this, but it's just instrumental music. It shouldn't be taking over the whole reading here. It should be, you know, somewhat ominous. I don't know if this is ominous. It might be to some people, but let's give it a shot. Where was I? Oh, yeah, so you can imagine the state of psychological breakdown that affects a soldier as he gathers the remains of his colleagues after they stepped on landmines that tore them apart. After this situation, the soldier is caught between two hard options. He either refuses to leave his military camp on patrols and is therefore... Osama Tahouse music is... It's really kind of weird for me. Leave his military camp on patrols and is therefore dogged by ruthless punishments enacted by the Vietnam butcher, which would mean the U.S. Army, or he gets destroyed by the mines. Boy, he's really rambling all over the place, isn't he? That Vietnam butcher thing, that's interesting. I hope he's not going to do that again. This puts him under psychological pressure, fear, and humiliation, while his nation is ignorant of what is going on. I have no idea what's going on in this paragraph. This is worthy of a Bush speech, really. The soldier has no solution except to commit suicide. That is a strong message to you, written by his soul, blood, and pain, to save what can be saved from this hell. The solution is in your hands if you care about them, meaning the soldiers. My God, is this the way he talks all the time? All those roundabout innuendos and things? You know, placing an order at a fast food place, it would take forever. Okay, let's try to continue here. And by the way, it's really almost impossible for me to continue with such high-energy music because it's so distracting. The words are distracting enough, all right, without me having to feel like I have to dance or something. All right, jungle-ish, I guess that's good. The news of our brother Mujahideen, or Holy Warriors, is different from what the Pentagon publishes. They, meaning the news of Mujahideen, and what the media report is the truth of what is happening on the ground. Okay, you know, you can't do that. It's an instrumental. It's not an instrumental if you talk, all right? All right. Sorry. What deepens the doubt over the White House's information is the fact that it targets the media reporting the truth from the ground, and it has appeared lately, supported by documents, that the butcher of freedom in the world, meaning... All right, you know, you told this to us two times, and no more, okay? If you do it again, we're moving to another track. What's so hard about instrumental? You know, that's a very simple word. Continuing, yes, the butcher of freedom in the world is Bush. He had decided to bomb the headquarters of Al Jazeera in Qatar after bombing its offices in Kabul and Baghdad. And, of course, that was a significant part of this statement because it indicates that he was aware of that story, which I believe came out only about a month or two ago, that Bush was considering bombing Al Jazeera in Qatar, that's big news. And, in fact, that's in a memo someplace in England that everybody over there is too afraid to to read from, because they have the Official Secrets Act or something over there that prevents people from speaking freely. As I've offered before, if anybody just wants to send it over here, we'll talk about it. We won't tell anybody, no matter how much they plead and implore us, who sent it to us. Again, the address, otw@20sekunda.com, if you have the memo between Blair and Bush, where Bush talks about bombing Al Jazeera. Okay, on another issue, jihad, holy war, is on... Why'd they have to put that in brackets? We know what jihad is. This is Bin Laden for morons. Okay. Now, you know, that's it. That's it. No, I gave you a chance. You're done. You're done. Next version. All right. Again, with the high energy, but whatever. This is appropriate for Bin Laden? It really sounds very disco-y. Okay. The jihad is ongoing, thank God, despite all the oppressive measures adopted by the U.S. Army and its agents, which is to a point where there is no difference between this criminality and Saddam's criminality, as it has reached the degree of raping women and taking them as hostages instead of their husbands. Yeah. As for torturing men, they have used burning chemical acids and drills on their joints, and when they give up on interrogating them, they sometimes use the drill... Wait a minute. Stand up like a man and look me in the eye. Turn around. Take one final look at what you've left behind. This isn't appropriate. And walk away from the greatest lover you have ever known. Yes, walk away. You're telling me that you can make it on your own. By yourself, all alone, without my help. Mister, you just made a big mistake. Turn this down. You know, that's completely inappropriate for what I'm trying to do here. Maybe it was labeled by mistake as an instrumental, but it's not, all right? Something else? I've never had so much trouble with music before. Oh, this is good. This is good. Okay, let's continue with this. This sounds nice and ominous. What was that last piece anyway, and who brought that in here? My God, I'm going to get all sorts of letters. Torturing men. Yes, they've used burning chemical acids and drills on their joints, and when they give up on interrogating them, they sometimes use the drills on their heads until they die. Read, if you will, the reports of the horrors in Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo prisons. And what is this, Babylon 5 music? This is great. And I say that despite all the barbaric methods, they have not broken the fierceness of the resistance. The Mujahideen, thank God, are increasing in number and strength, so much so that reports point to the ultimate failure and defeat of the unlucky quartet of Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Wolfowitz. Isn't that brilliant? The unlucky quartet. How poetic. We've never referred to them that way. The unlucky quartet of Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Wolfowitz. This guy really spends a lot of time writing. How does he find time to kill people and cause terror? Declaring this defeat is just a matter of time, depending partly on how much the American people know of the size of this tragedy. The sensible people realize that Bush does not have a plan to make his alleged victory in Iraq come true. And if you compare the small number of dead on the day that Bush announced the end of major operations in that fake, ridiculous show aboard the aircraft carrier... Oh, wow, he watches the news. With the tenfold number of dead and wounded who were killed in the smaller operations, you would know the truth of what I say. This is that Bush and his administration do not have the will or the ability to get out of Iraq for their own private suspect reasons. And so, to return to the issue, I say that results of polls please those who are sensible, and Bush's opposition to them is a mistake. The reality shows that the war against America and its allies has not been limited to Iraq, as Bush claims. Iraq has become a point of attraction and restorer of our energies. At the same time, the Mujahideen, with God's grace, have managed repeatedly to penetrate all security measures adopted by the unjust allied countries. The proof of that is the explosions you have seen in the capitals of the European nations who are in this aggressive coalition. No doubt a reference to London. and I guess Madrid. The delay in similar operations happening in America has not been because of failure to break through your security measures. No, no, don't worry about that. We're planning. We're almost ready, in fact. Yeah, the operations are under preparation, and you will see them in your homes the minute they are through. With God's permission. All right, they're just waiting on permission from God to unleash the terror. Based on what has been said, this shows the errors of Bush's statement, the one that slipped from him. The one that slipped from him. Which is at the heart of polls calling for withdrawing the troops. It is better that Americans don't fight Muslims on their lands and that they don't fight us on ours. We don't mind offering you a long-term truce on fair conditions that we adhere to. We are a nation that God has forbidden to lie and cheat. Actually, not really a nation at all, are you? But regardless, both sides can enjoy security and stability under this truce, so we can build Iraq and Afghanistan, which have been destroyed in this war. There is no shame in this solution, which prevents the wasting of billions of dollars that have gone to those with influence and merchants of war in America, who have supported Bush's election campaign with billions of dollars, which lets us understand the insistence by Bush and his gang to carry on with war. If you Americans are sincere in your desire for peace and security, we have answered you. And if Bush decides to carry on with his lies and oppression, then it would be useful for you to read the book Rogue State, which states in its introduction, if I were president, I would stop the attacks on the United States. First, I would give an apology to all the widows and orphans and those who were tortured. Then I would announce that American interference in the nations of the world has ended once and for all. And, you know, sales of that book have really shot up in the last week or so. Finally, I say that war will go either in our favor or yours. If it is the former, it means your loss and your shame forever, and it is headed in this course. If it is the latter, read history. We are people who do not stand for injustice, and we will seek revenge all our lives. The nights and days will not pass without us taking vengeance, like on September 11th, God permitting. Your minds will be troubled and your lives embittered. As for us, we have nothing to lose. A swimmer in the ocean does not fear the rain. You have occupied our lands, offended our honor and dignity, and let out our blood, and stolen our money, and destroyed our houses, and played with our security, and we will give you the same treatment. And there's too many ands in that sentence. Use some commas, Osama, for God's sake. You have tried to prevent us from leading a dignified life, but you will not be able to prevent us from a dignified death. Failing to carry out jihad, which is called for in our religion, is a sin. The best death to us is under the shadows of swords. Don't let your strength and modern arms fool you. They win a few battles, but lose the war. Patience and steadfastness are much better. We were patient in fighting the Soviet Union with simple weapons for 10 years, and we bled their economy, and now they are nothing. In that, there is a lesson for you. Wow, the music ended right at the end of the... Oh, that's perfect. That was the perfect song for Osama there. Words of Osama bin Laden. And maybe we can make a tradition of this every time he releases a tape of some sort. We can bring you the actual words. Because you didn't hear those anyplace else, did you? No. Well, there was a lot of interesting little tidbits in there, I think. But, wow. I wonder how long it takes to put something like that together. Meanwhile, over here on our shores, the Pentagon is urging families of soldiers and other victims of this horrible policy of ours to laugh. That's right. When the stress of the war in Iraq becomes too severe, the Pentagon suggests military families learn how to laugh. Isn't that precious? With help from the Pentagon's chief laughter instructor, I couldn't make this up. Families of National Guard members are learning to walk like a penguin, laugh like a lion, and blurt ha-ha, hee-hee, and ho-ho. No. No, it's not The Onion. It's USA Today. I swear to God. I laugh every chance I get, says retired Army Colonel James Scotty Scott. Oh, what a funny name that is. He is chief laughter instructor. They probably have a whole fleet of them. That's why I'm blessed to be at the Pentagon, where we definitely need a lot of laughter in our lives. Scott, 57 years old, is certified as a laughter training specialist by the Ohio-based, get ready, World Laughter Tour, a group that promotes mirth as medicine. It touts scientific research that suggests chuckling can boost the body's immune system and decrease stress hormones. A Pentagon spokeswoman, Lieutenant Colonel Ellen Crank, says the Pentagon is committed to the program and values Scott's skills. We sent him to the training, she says. Oh, boy. We believe our program prevents hardening of the attitudes, says Scott in one of his wordplay aphorisms that beg for a rim shot. I think the USA Today writer is getting in on this now. The founder and chief executive of the World Laughter Tour is psychologist Steve Wilson, who calls himself Chairman of the Board, spelled B-O-R-E-D. This is about as stupid a story as I think I've ever seen. And that's how our Pentagon deals with the garbage that's going on. Meanwhile, U.S. Senator Harry Reid, Democrat of Nevada, accused Republicans of Orwellian doublespeak, said Democrats want to put progress, not politics, first. Reid used the Democratic Party's weekly radio address to issue an indictment of Republican policies. He said the GOP has been naming something just the opposite to cover how unpleasant it really is. He said GOP use of language reminds him of George Orwell's 1984, with such programs as Clear Skies Initiative, Healthy Forest Initiative, and No Child Left Behind, all harming the areas they were designed to help. I imagine he didn't know about the laughter program. It is time now for the president to put an end to this pattern of deceit, and he can do so when he gives his State of the Union address at the end of this month. Oh, that's right. That's coming up, isn't it? That's going to be fun. The American people need to hear him denounce the Republican culture of corruption and tell us how he's going to reform our nation's capital. Well, I'll tell you what. He's going to give a speech in front of a bunch of spineless congressmen who are just going to applaud him 45 times, and nothing is going to change. Just like today, Bush met with the Pakistani Prime Minister, how do you say that, Shaukat Aziz. This is the guy who said last week, or over the weekend, that Bush's reports of senior al-Qaeda leaders being at some house in Pakistan that was targeted by U.S. missiles, that these people were actually killed. He says that was ridiculous, absurd, a complete fabrication. Today, he was in Washington meeting with Bush. He didn't say a word about it. He kept his mouth shut. And he let Bush say that the relationship with Pakistan is a vital relationship for the United States. I want to thank the Prime Minister and thank the President for working closely with us on a variety of issues. That's all it ever comes down to. People don't have the guts to speak up when it comes time to. Bush announced he would visit Pakistan and India in March. Well, That's a bold move. I wonder if he's actually going to take time to talk to some Pakistani people or just stay in some palaces. I don't know if he realizes how angry people in Pakistan are right now. All right, let's take a look at a couple pieces of mail because we are rapidly running out of time, as we always do. It's so sad how that happens, but time is fleeting. Our email address is otw@2600.com, and we always look forward to hearing from our listeners, no matter where you are. In fact, the crazier places you are, the better. But then again, if you're local, that's fine, too. Dear Emmanuel, I really enjoyed the New Year's show from Amsterdam. I'm going there in just a few days now. When you said on the last show that people are so afraid if someone learns they visited a coffee shop and smoked a joint or two, yes, it might be illegal in the country you are from, but as you smoke, you don't get a label on your forehead that says, smoke some pot in Amsterdam. What we do in our free time is our business as long as we don't hurt anyone. Amen. Amen to that. And, you know, people just seem to have totally forgotten that. They're in a surveillance society where everything they do, no matter where they are, they have to be accountable for 24 hours a day. We have companies now who will fire people if they smoke in their homes. I'm not a smoker, and I don't like smokers. I don't like people smoking. All right, I like smokers just fine. I have many friends who are smokers, but I don't like the fact that they smoke. I think it's bad. I think it's stupid. But firing people for doing it on their spare time in their homes? And, of course, you have the drug thing. I can see it for air traffic controllers. People who literally have others' lives in their hands. If a side effect from a drug of even a few days ago is a possibility, okay. but only if that's the reason, not some kind of morality test. But I see people constantly who journey to other parts of the world. They go to other parts of the world, and they give the usual speech about, wow, this is so much better than the United States. We're so uptight. We have too many rules. If only we're like that back home. Oh, and by the way, don't tell anybody what I did here. Don't tell anybody. Because someday, someone might bring it up. And then I'd have to admit that I inhaled a joint. Or went to a nudie bar or something. I mean, I see the same thing in this country all the time. There's some kind of a, I don't have the story here, but there's some kind of a, I think it's an adult video store that's opening, I think it's in New York. Don't quote me on that, though. And you have people from the Democratic Party, supposedly the more enlightened of the two parties, literally taking down people's license plates who go there so that they can reveal who they are to the public. Because if you go to that kind of a place, you must be a sex offender and you have to be laid out for the whole public to judge. That's the kind of society where even the more liberal people believe this, where people accept taking drug tests as a matter of course. It's very easy to fall into this, very hard to get out of. Meanwhile, you walk through any European capital, and you know what you see? You see sex shops in the middle of the street, next to churches. That's right, next to churches. Little kids walk past these things. Little kids go into bookstores where you have copies of Playboy with full frontal nudity on the cover, not blocked. And you know what? They survive, and they're probably a whole lot more well-adjusted than we are. Now, I'm not saying pornography is necessarily the best thing in the world, but I'll take it over this self-righteousness and moral crusading that we seem to have everywhere around us. Okay, continuing with this letter. I'm sorry. I really got off on a sidetrack there. Keep up the good work. I download your shows every week. As I live in Sweden, I can't always stay up late and listen to you live. And as I'm heading to Amsterdam, anything I should visit? Signed Zen, spelled X-E-N. Also, I'm thinking of visiting ASCII. ASCII is it stands for Amsterdam Subversive Center for Information Interchange. Cool place. Check out their website, scii.nl. Maybe you can visit them. But I would recommend just walking around the streets. Don't do all the tourist things, even though visiting the Anne Frank House is something you really should do. But you live in Europe, you probably have heard of World War II and don't need the education. I don't know, I would just kind of hang out, sit in the coffee shop for 6 hours, watch the world go by. That's where you really have the most fun. Okay, let's see. I think we're only going to have time for one more letter. I enjoy listening to both Off the Hook and Off the Wall every week. As a hacker who is a hacker more for the sake of the technical revolution than for sport, I thoroughly enjoy your political rants. As long as they relate to security, they are always appropriate on Off the Hook. And if they relate to anything else, they fit perfectly on Off the Wall. Don't listen to anyone who tells you otherwise. I just finished writing a modern adaptation of the famous poem you may have heard relating to, I think, World War II. I'd be delighted and honored if you saw fit to read it on either of your shows. Here we go. Signed, Adam. Adam Antic. Thank you for sending this. When they sued the file-sharing mothers, I remained silent. I switched to another network. When they tapped our phone lines, I did not speak out. I no longer used my phone. When they came for the guitar tabs, I remained silent. I no longer played the guitar. When they opened and read personal letters, I did not speak out. I no longer used the mail service. When they told us not to think, we already no longer used our minds. Thank you very much for sending that in. Again, our email address, otw@2600.com. We had a lot of feedback from the song we played last week. Everybody wanted to know what it was. It was from a band called Donner Party, D-O-N-N-E-R Party. You can find their CD someplace. The song we played was Box Full of Bones. We're going to play something different this week.
When you die, your eyes pop out, your head becomes a mushy lump.
Good night.
Your stomach is a stack and bugs crawl up and down your back. You just lay there and you never have to speak. And there's nothing you should hear. There's no difference between a minute. quite difficult unless you see the slide from the bottom of the hill.
Collins, when I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.